My name is Maria and I'm an addict. This is a very full room. I'm really nervous. I have no idea who Caleb was talking about, but thank you so much for the introduction. That was amazing. I guess I need to decide where I'm going to start. I guess I'm going to first explain to you that I'm an emotional person. So there's probably a good chance that I'm going to have a moment of tears up here. I hope that's okay with everybody here. It just, you know what, I'm passionate about recovery. I'm passionate about the life that I've been given as a direct result of working the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous. And, you know, there's no hiding that for me. There's no hiding or pretending that I've got my cool because I fucking don't, right? I came across a quote recently and it says, "I understand now that I'm a mess, that I'm not a mess, but a deeply feeling person in a messy world. I explain now when someone asks me why I cry so often, I say for the same reason that I laugh so often, because I'm paying attention." So that's kind of, you know, a summary of who I am, and I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you so much for the committee for asking. Woo! Thank you so much to the committee of, I'm just going to pull this forward a little bit. Thank you so much to the committee of the Midwest Regional Convention for asking me to be here and asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope, you know, as I've lived it and as I've experienced it, because that's all I can share with you, right? I'm not here to endorse any specific anything. You know, I'm just here to share my experience, strength, and hope, and the change that's happened as a result of working the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous, for which I am so passionate and so grateful for. I want to recognize everybody here that's new, everybody here that, you know, is taking a chance on their recovery or on their journey or on their life. You know, I'm so grateful that there's so many new people here. You know, we hear a lot in the rooms that the newcomer is the most important person in the rooms. I don't exactly align with that because, you know, it's a room full of newcomers isn't very effective if we don't have some old timers. So I believe that there's equality in the importance of the people here. So if you're new, reach out to the people in the back that have been here for a while. And if you're in the back, reach out to the people that are up at the front, right? We can't do this without each other. There's no way we can do this without each other. So I thought I'd start with a little joke. Hopefully everybody, you know, finds it in good taste. I used to be addicted to soap, but I'm clean now. So, I'm going to reintroduce myself. My name is Maria, and I should be dead. Right? That's the reality for me, is that I lived a life that qualified me to not be here, but for whatever reason, God saw fit, right, that I needed to be in Milwaukee on November 3rd, 2023 to share my experience, strength, and hope so that hopefully somebody else in this room can be lit on fire for this program of recovery and find freedom. I don't know what that purpose is. I don't know why God has brought me to this place, but here I am, and I'm so grateful to be here again. Thank you to the committee for inviting me to come out. So, you know, what qualifies me to be here? That's something that runs through my mind, right? What qualifies me to be here? You know, we are people who normally would not mix, and we hear that in our literature, right? And I believe that to be true. What does qualify me to be here is the fact that for whatever reason, I have found the solution. You know, I lived in the problem for so long. I lived in the problem for such a long time. And, you know, I remember hearing early on in my recovery that the reality is that recovery is not for people who need it. Because if it were, we'd fill the stadium or we'd fill your hockey rink or whatever it is that you guys have here in Milwaukee, we'd fill that place if we were a program for people who need it. We're actually a program for people who want it. So we fill this hotel, and we come and we share our experience, strength, and hope, and that's where the beginnings start. So I'm going to share with you a little bit about my story, what it was like, what happened, what is my life like today. I'm going to try to keep it fairly simple. I don't know how much time I have up here. I'm assuming about 45 minutes to an hour. Is that right, Dane? Yeah, perfect. Okay. So, CA, what can I share about CA? I have so much information to share, and I just hope that I catch all of it. One thing I do want to recognize and that I want to speak on is that, man, you guys know how to party. You guys know how to get down in this city. There's one thing I learned about Wisconsin. There's one thing I learned about Milwaukee is you guys love cheese. But there's one thing I learned in this room is you guys love cocaine. Am I right? Right? Yeah. So do I. Right? So do I. And that's what brought me here. That's what brought me here. So I grew up in a family. You know, I grew up in an alcoholic family. Now, everybody's stories are different, and I don't want to say that my story is the example of recovery or the example of you know, what it makes to be an addict, but, you know, all I can share with you is my story. That's all I have brought with me here today is my story. And so my story starts out, you know, as a young kid growing up in an alcoholic family. I had both of my parents were alcoholics. You know, all throughout my childhood, my mom continued to drink right up until, you know, probably about 3 years ago when she developed dementia and was put into a home and isn't able to drink anymore. That's the only reason why she stopped, because she was forced to stop. My dad, however, found recovery when I was quite young and was my example of recovery when I realized that I needed help. And so, you know, I grew up initially starting out in this alcoholic family with alcoholic parents. I'm the youngest of five kids. You know, I struggled with this feeling, and I think this is important to know, that I struggled with this feeling of not fitting in, not being a part of, not feeling like one of a community, including my own family. You know, I was the youngest of five kids. My older siblings were always like, get out of my room, leave me alone, go away, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to have anything to do with you, just leave us alone. And so I struggled with that, and, you know, I thought maybe that I'd find some community in my school friends, and you know, there was a turning point kind of in my youth where I think I was in seventh grade, and, you know, pretty impressionable at that age, and my friends meant everything to me, and, you know, I'm going to the park to go and meet my friends that are already there, and one of the girls cuts me off on the path, and she says, no, we don't want to be your friend anymore. And that tore at my insides, you know, that challenged everything that I thought I knew about myself at that point. And I, again, felt outside, right? I felt like I was an outsider. I didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like I was a part of anything. So a little bit of, you know, what I want to talk about is the fact that, you know, I spent the rest of the several years after that day trying to change myself so that you would like me. I used to have this little thing that I would say in active addiction. People would say, what's your name? I'd be like, it's anything you want it to be. You tell me who you want me to be and I'll be that person, right? I just wanted to fit in so bad. What I found today, there's a difference between fitting in and belonging. You know, when I spent all of my troubled years, we'll say, trying so hard to fit in. Fitting in is about changing who I am so that you'll like me. What I found in Cocaine Anonymous, though, is belonging. And the difference is that in belonging, I get to just be who I am and you like me anyway. What an amazing experience that has been for me in recovery, right? That I just belong. And I belong in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous. I belong with my peers in Cocaine Anonymous. And, you know, I've really found a place where I feel at home. And that's such an amazing feeling for me. So I grew up in this alcoholic family with alcoholic parents. You know, I don't fit in there. I don't fit in with my school friends. I don't really fit in with anybody. And I always feel like my skin is too tight. I always feel like something is wrong with me. And if I could just figure out what that is, everything would be okay. And you know, the moment that that happened for me was the first time I picked up a drug. I picked up a drug for the first time, and all of a sudden, I felt normal. what I perceived as being normal at that time, right? It all of a sudden felt normal. I felt like I was on top of the world. I had arrived. You know, I had come to that place where it was like nothing else in the world mattered anymore, and I finally felt like I found the thing that is going to solve all of my problems. So to back up a little bit and give you guys a little bit of perspective, you know, growing up in this family with alcoholic parents, I thought the solution to never being like my parents was to never drink. That was my solution. I was just never going to drink alcohol. I was never going to be an alcoholic. I never wanted to be like them. There was lots of violence. There was lots of neglect. There was lots of dysfunction in my family. And I never wanted to be like that. And I thought the solution was to never drink. But what I didn't know was that I had the predisposition to become an addict as a result of everything that I had grown up with, right? So whether or not that plays into the fact that my parents were alcoholics, whether that was environmental, I don't know for sure, but I had the predisposition available to me to become an addict. And I didn't know that the booze bone was connected to the coke bone, is connected to the crystal meth bone. I didn't know that, right? I didn't know that. I didn't know that it didn't matter what I put into my body, that if I had that predisposition, that I was going to abuse whatever it was that I put into my body. Because when I start, shit, there's no stopping me. There is absolutely no stopping me, and I didn't know that. And so the first time I used drugs in my life, not drinking because I didn't want to be like my parents, like I had arrived, I had found the solution to life, and I was a happy teenage girl. I thought I found everything that I needed to belong in this world. And so, you know, I'm going to fast forward a bunch because, you know, the details of my using, the details of all the things that happened, all the experiences that I had don't really matter. What matters is that I want to be able to qualify myself with you to let you know that I am a true addict and a true alcoholic, because when I start, there is no end. You know, I have this perfect, you know, thought in my mind that tells me I'm going to pick up a 20-piece, or I'm just going to smoke a little joint, or I'm going to pick up a 6-pack, or whatever it is that I'm going to do for me. Sounds like a great frickin' plan. Sounds amazing. But the problem is that I can't execute that plan, because as soon as it hits my body, I can't stop. I start to obsess. I start to obsess even before that 6-pack is gone. I start to obsess before that 20-piece is gone. I start to scheme and try to plan and plot in my mind, how am I going to get more? Right? That wasn't part of the plan. You know, I never grew up as a little girl thinking, man, I can't wait until I'm living on the streets and I'm putting needles in my arms. I cannot wait until I'm turning tricks on the corner of a downtown street in Edmonton, Alberta. I did not plan any of these things for my life, but cocaine made those things happen to me. I didn't have a choice. See, I didn't have a choice, and I didn't understand that at the time, because I thought I did. You know, I'm going to fast forward a whole bunch through my using. You know, there was a point in my using career where I really thought to myself, I'm going to stop when it's time to grow up. That time isn't now. But when it's time, I'll know. I'll know. And I'll just stop. And I truly believed with my whole heart that that was the truth. I truly believed that. And so, you know, again, fast forward a little bit more, I find myself in a situation where I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I live in a house with a white picket fence, and I've got 2 cars in the garage, and I've got a pretty good life. I've got a pretty good life. And my husband says to me, I think you have a problem. You know what my problem was? You know what my addict mind said? Yeah, you. Get out. I don't need anybody to dictate and tell me how much and when I can use and when I can't, right? Because in my mind, I was doing a really good job, because I would just use on Friday nights. Well, and then it turned into Friday and Saturday. And then it turned into, well, every day of the week, as long as my kid is in bed and as long as my husband is satisfied and there's food on the table, I can use whatever I want, as long as it's not at work. Well, maybe when I'm at work, as long as it's in the bathroom and nobody knows, right? Like, the progression of my illness just got, like, I didn't see it at the time, but the progression of my illness got more and more intense as time went on, and I found myself suddenly uncontrollably using everything and anything that I could get my hands on. I just wanted all of it all the time. And all of a sudden, I was faced with this decision. Like, it's time to grow up. Your husband's going to leave you. Me, my husband's going to leave me because I can't stop using. And I don't know what to do other than to say, it's time to grow up. My husband, at the time, we're going through divorce proceedings. He tells the judge, I think my wife has a drug problem and she's not fit to be a mother. I had a 2-year-old daughter at the time. You know, I wanted her more than anything in my life. When I was a young girl, I was diagnosed with some issues, and I was told that my chances of conceiving a child were maybe 5%. I wanted her more than anything in this world. I went through fertility clinics. I did all the things. I did everything I had to do to have my beautiful daughter. And he tells the judge that I'm an unfit mother. And I was absolutely devastated. So as a good addict, I'm like, I'll just stop. It's time to grow up. I got to do what I got to do, right? So, but it's not, I'm not going to stop today. Like, that's just silly. I'm going to stop when I need to. And it's not quite yet. And so, you know, as a good addict, I marked on the calendar. I marked a date for myself. And I was like, by this day, I'm going to have to provide the judge with a clean urinalysis. It's time to stop on this day. I'm actually going to give myself even 5 days grace, just in case there's a lot in my system and it needs to get out, right? So that day came where it was like, today's the day. It's time to quit, Maria. What are you going to do? Well, I give myself 5 days grace. I could probably, you know, push it to tomorrow, right? That's what happened to me is I pushed it to tomorrow. I pushed it off for another day, and then I pushed it off for another day, and I pushed it off for another day, and all of a sudden it's like, today, you have to stop or you will absolutely not have a clean urinalysis and you will lose custody of your daughter. What is your choice? And I was like, that's it. I'm done. And I woke up with a strong resolve to not pick up. And I gave it everything I had, all of my willpower, everything in my being. My daughter was on the line. She meant everything to me. And I didn't get high. I didn't get high for 12 hours. That's what I was able to do on my own willpower. I just couldn't stop. The obsession was so great. I couldn't stop thinking about how am I going to get loaded again? How am I going to feel okay in my own skin? Because this is awful. I can't do it. And I managed to stay clean and sober for 12 hours, and I picked up, and I knew it was game over. And I was absolutely shocked. You know, I don't know if I can tell you how much I was in absolute shock, because I honestly believed with my whole heart. Anybody else in this room ever believe that when it was time to grow up, you just quit? Right? I honestly believe that was the solution and that I wasn't really an addict because I didn't drink like my parents, right? I just like to, you know, dabble a little here and there. And it was time to grow up and I just couldn't do it. When I say dabble here and there, I mean like using continuously every day, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, all the time. I just dabbled a little bit. Yeah. And so, you know, I was faced with some reality and I was absolutely brokenhearted. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. But my dad had made it into Alcoholics Anonymous many years prior to that. And I thought, I wonder if they can help. Wonder if they have, you know, a solution for me. And so I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what AA is like here, but back where I'm from, they're a little bit like, we don't really like the drug word. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't get me wrong. I'm so grateful that they are our mother fellowship and they have given us everything that we need to recover. But, you know, I called Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm like, I don't have an alcohol problem because I don't want to be like my parents, but can you help me? And they were like, no. But there's some other 12-step fellowships out there that might be helpful for you. And so I looked into it, and, you know, I was terrified. I went to my first meeting, and I was loaded. I went to a 12-step meeting, and I showed up, and it was not a good time. I do not suggest going to meetings loaded. It is not any fun for anyone. But I mean, I had the willingness, right? And that, thankfully, that's what our traditions say, is that the only requirement for Cocaine Anonymous membership is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. And I had that desire that day. I did not want to get loaded anymore. And so I went to my first meeting, and I was like, well, that was kind of cool. So I went to another meeting. I left and I got loaded, and I went to another meeting and I left and I got loaded. And I kept doing this for a few weeks until it was like, man, these guys are having a good time. They're laughing, smiling. Like, don't you know how awful I feel? How can you be laughing at a time like this? Is what was running through my mind. But I wanted a little bit of that because I was like, how do they get that? I don't know how to get that. I don't know the last time. You know, I'm sitting in a hotel room reefing on a crack pipe and laughing and having a good time. Like, that was not part of the thing for me, right? Like, that just peeking out of the closet and crawling on the carpet. I was not laughing and having a good time. You know, the good time for me was over a long time ago. But I saw something in the people in the rooms, and I wanted some of that. And so I'll tell you a little funny story of my early recovery. So I'm going to this meeting consistently. I'm showing up. But I think you guys have got something going on, because there's no way in my mind that I can be clean and sober and be happy at the same time. That is an impossibility to me. So I went to a meeting, and they used to have a smoke break, and I'd follow people around on the smoke break because I was convinced that you guys had a magic pill. Something. There's no way that you can be happy and sober at the same time. And so I'm going to find out what you guys got. And so I'd follow people around on the smoke break, and I'd be like, what's going on over there? What you got? You know? And I went enough times, and I did that enough times, that I realized y'all had nothing. You had nothing in your system. And I was like blown away by that. And I was just like, wow, that's crazy. I have never heard of something like that. But you know what? Maybe I can have some of that too. And it was on that day that I decided that I'm going to give this an honest shot, and I'm going to try this program of recovery and see what I can do. But you know, when I came in, I didn't feel like I had the same problem that some of y'all had, because I heard stories in the rooms about women who really struggled and worked on the streets and did things to get drugs and alcohol. I heard about men who were robbing liquor stores and doing all these things. And I hadn't done any of that kind of stuff. I just lost my kid. That was it. That was like what I experienced as my bottom at that time. And so I quickly separated myself from everybody in that room. And I was like, I'm not as bad as you. Maybe I don't need the 12 steps. Maybe I'll just come to meetings. I'm going to be a chair warmer. I'm going to warm those chairs for you guys. I'm just going to show up. I'm going to warm those chairs. And hopefully, I'm going to get this through osmosis. That's how it's going to work for me. So, you know, I went to meetings. I went to all the sober dances. I did all the things. I tried to participate in the program as much as I could, except for the 12 steps. I got a sponsor. You know, I did all the things. You know, the first person I asked to help me through the 12 steps, I asked her, and probably, you know, in hindsight now, was probably a red flag when I asked her, because I said, you know, can you help me? And she says, you're not ready yet. And I was like, oh, like, what do I do to gotta get ready? And she's like, no, you just come back in a couple of months and maybe we'll start the steps then. And I was like, okay. I didn't know what that meant, but I kept coming back and I kept going to meetings, and I didn't work the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous. And, you know, I really thought that just being a part of this program was going to be the solution for me. And I can tell you that when I got 14 months clean and sober off of everything, off of all drugs and alcohol, when I got that 14 months clean and sober, and I was told by the judge that you're not ready to have your kid back, I had no tools in my spiritual tool belt, nothing, because I hadn't worked the steps. And so the only solution for a pain like that was to fucking get loaded, right? I had nothing stopping me. I had no defense against that next use at all, because I hadn't worked the 12 steps. And so when that pain hit, you know, I mean, I flirted with it a little bit. I was like, well, maybe I'll just start smoking, you know, again. And maybe I'll just go do a little bit of gambling or something, you know, because I was trying to be clean off of everything. So, you know, maybe I'll just start small. And that didn't last very long. You know, my idea was that I was just gonna get a joint and everything was gonna be okay. And so I called Julio and he was like, well, I don't have any of that. All I've got is some cocaine. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do some of that until the weed shows up. You know, the weed never had to show up after that because I was like done, right? I was hooked. I was done. I was hooked in. And, you know, in my mind, I honestly thought this to myself. So anybody who's new in this room or, you know, kind of experiencing some of what I've been talking about, in my mind, I truly, so I'm still sick because I haven't worked the 12 steps, but in my mind, I truly believed I'm just going to use tonight and I'm going to go back to a meeting tomorrow and I'm going to tell all my friends that I had a little slip, take a white key tag, everything's going to be okay. And I did that. And then I left that meeting and I got loaded. And then I went to another meeting the next day after I used some more, and I left that meeting and I got loaded. And the cycle continued, and the amount of meetings that I was going to got less and less and less, and the amount of times I was getting loaded got more and more and more, until like that totally saturated my life, and I wasn't interested in going to meetings anymore because it's really hard to go to meetings when you're trying to coordinate a drug dealer. So, you know, that became the most important thing in my life. You know, I had no tools in my spiritual tool belt, and I had nothing in my program other than some sober dances to help me through those tough times, right? And so that's kind of how things went for me. And, you know, I got 60 days, and then I got 90 days, and I relapsed, and I got 6 months, and I relapsed, and I really struggled. You know, it's really hard. You know, relapse is not a part of recovery. I want you to know that, right? Relapse is not a part of recovery. It's a part of the disease. And I had been so delusioned by the fact that I thought I could do this on my own. I just need to go to some meetings, and I just need to hook up with some people, and I just need to, you know, not work the 12 steps and not really work an honest program, and I don't need to do any of these things because I'm terminally unique and I'm different than everybody else. I separated myself from all of you, and I didn't see me in you. So I encourage you, if you're new, I don't care what it is that I say today or whether I say nothing at all, I hope that you find somebody in this convention that you see a little bit of yourself in and ask them to help you, ask them to sponsor you, ask them to help you through this process of the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous, because it's in that that we find the solution. So, 4.5 years later, I crawled my ass back into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous, and that was a hard pill to swallow, no pun intended. You know, that was not an easy thing for me to do because now I have to face all those people and I didn't know if I could do it. And, you know, what I found when I came back into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous is people said, we missed you. We love you. I'm glad you're not dead. You know, that was the message that I received when I came back into the rooms for the last time. And, you know, I don't know what your story is like, and I don't know whether or not, you know, what your story entails exactly, but I knew for me, this is just for me, like, my ego is huge, right? I think I'm the most important person in the room at all times. I love to talk about myself. I'm up here. I'm talking about myself. Don't you love it? Aren't we having a good time? I love me. I think I'm awesome. And so, you know, when I came into the rooms, it was somebody suggested to me that everything I thought I knew about recovery, everything I thought I knew about sobriety, everything I thought I knew about the 12 steps and the program of recovery needed to go out the window because it didn't fucking work for me. My idea of what recovery looks like did not work for me. Why? Because I didn't work the program of Cocaine Anonymous. And so when I came in, was probably the most humble moment of my life, and I've never been able to achieve that level of humility ever again in my life. But for the first time in my life, I was like, I don't know what to do. Someone please help me, you know? And so, you know, I did a few things when I came into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous that were suggested to me, and it wasn't an easy road for me by any stretch of the imagination, but I knew so much that I wanted CA. You know, in that 4.5 years that I was still out there using and suffering, you know, my kid was at living with my parents, and she had no idea where I was. That was the moment for me that things changed, as I'm sitting in a crack house in Calgary, Alberta, it's freezing outside, and I have this moment of, like, clarity in the midst of my using, where I was like, I didn't come this far only to come this far, you know? I didn't come this far only to come this far, and what I mean by that is that this is not the life that I wanted for myself. This is not what I dreamt of when I was playing with Barbies as a little girl in my bedroom. This is not what I pictured for myself. This was not part of the plan. How did I end up here? I'm supposed to be a mother. I'm supposed to be a daughter. I'm supposed to be a sister. I'm supposed to be all these amazing things in my life, and I am robbing myself. I'm absolutely robbing myself of the opportunity to be a productive member of society, and this is not what I want. People in the back of the house, I can hear them chattering, or at least I think I can. I'm pretty sure they want to kill me. You know, I was probably a little bit delusional. I heard somebody share this morning that, you know, when they came into recovery, they thought that things were good because they had a car that had three windows on it. You know, similarly, I had the same experience. I'm living in this house, and I've got a car. It doesn't have any door handles on it because they're all broken off, and the key is broken off into the trunk. So you got to kind of prop the door open to the driver's side if you want to get back in the car ever again. So in my mind, they want to kill me for my sweet ride, right? I don't know if I was, like, imagining things or not, but, you know, I had this moment where I truly believed that they were plotting my death because they wanted my car. And I had this overwhelming sense of, like, this is not what I signed up for. What am I doing here? How did my life get to this point? Where did I go wrong? Where did things end up? How did things end up like this? And so, you know, a couple other thoughts ran through my mind is that, you know, if you don't change something, you're never going to be a mother to that little girl. You know? That hit me really hard. I also had little visions in my mind of, like, I'm never going to be one of those lucky addicts that dies behind a dumpster with a brown paper bag or a needle in my arm or whatever those things are. I'm not going to be that lucky guy that gets to die from my addiction at a nice, ripe, young age. I'm going to have to hustle every day with my walker until I'm 80 trying to rob liquor stores so I can sell it for cocaine. That's what went through my mind, and I was like, I can't do that. I cannot live like this. I cannot continue on like this. Something has got to give. And so, you know, there's so much I want to share with you, and I don't know which parts are important and which parts aren't. But, you know, I had a moment in that crack house, and I was like, something's got to change. I don't know what to do, but something's got to change. And so I called a treatment center. I was like, I need to get in here. You know, I'm dying. I'm absolutely dying, and I don't know how to get well. Can you help me? And they were like, yeah, we can help you. But you got to get 5 days clean before we'll check you in. And I was like, I don't know if you guys have that here, but we have that back where I live, magical 5 days. I'm like, lady, if I could get 5 days clean and sober, I wouldn't be calling you right now. Am I right? If I could get 5 days clean and sober, we would not be having this conversation. I cannot get 5 days clean. And she was like, you got to do it. You check in a detox, do whatever you got to do, but we're not checking you in until you get 5 days clean. So I checked myself. I tried to check myself into a detox facility, and I couldn't because my partner at the time was there, and we have a strict rule where I'm from that if you're in partnership with somebody, you can't both be in the same detox center at the same time because it's probably not a super healthy idea. And so I was like, what am I going to do? And so I went back to the crack house, and I was like, you know, I was honestly, like, apart from hitting my knees, because I didn't that day, apart from hitting my knees, I was, like, done, and I was like, God, you have to help me. I don't know what to do. And I went back to that crack house, and I said to the guy who was, I don't know if he was like the house leader or whatever you want to call him, but he certainly didn't own the house, but I mean, he was the guy, right? So I told him my plan, and I was like, I need to get clean and sober. I don't know what to do. I can't check into detox. Can I please just stay in one of the bedrooms with the door closed, and I promise I won't come out? And he said, yeah, you can. And I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. And so I went into that room, and for the first time in my life, God did for me what I could not do for myself, and I stayed clean for 5 days in a crack house. You know, and it was weird because it wasn't particularly hard, which you'd think it might be because, you know, I hear the girls knocking on the door and they're like, hey, can you hook me up? And I hear the lighters flicking and I hear the things happening and all the stuff is going on around me and I can hear it happening outside of the room. But I don't want to use. I couldn't stay clean and sober for 12 hours to save my relationship with my child. But here I am in a crack house and I'm not fucking getting high for 5 days. You better believe God was in that house. And so, you know, long story short, all checked out. I got into the treatment facility. I got myself a bed, and I remember distinctly what it felt like to not have to clutch my belongings under my pillow as I slept. You know? I was home. And I went to my first Cocaine Anonymous meeting, and I've never looked back. Yeah. But, you know, that didn't come that easy for me. You know, when I made it into the rooms, when I made it back into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous, I was willing to do everything and anything the old-timers told me to do because I didn't know a lick about staying clean and sober, obviously. I didn't know what I was doing, and so I did what they told me to do, and some guy said, you need to start chairing this meeting. I'm like, seriously? Like, I barely have a minute clean, and he was like, start chairing this meeting. You don't need any clean time to chair a meeting. And so I chaired that meeting for the rest of the year, for an entire year, pardon me. I chaired that meeting for an entire year, and I didn't want anybody to take that position away from me. And I'll tell you what that experience gave me is it gave me a sense of belonging. It gave me a sense of, like, people started to know who I was because I was the girl at the front of the room chairing that meeting, and they got to know what my name was. And further than that, as the chair, I started to get to know what your names were. You know, I started to become a part of something far greater than myself, and I thank that man so much for the opportunity that he gave me by chairing that meeting. And I struggled a little bit with finding a sponsor, but eventually I found a woman sponsor that was willing to take me through the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous as they're laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I did that work. And I truly became a part of something. I truly became a part of something. And so the rest of my story is just to tell you about the gifts that I've received as a result of working the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous, and they have been innumerable. They have been so big in my life that I can't even count what those things look like, you know. I'm going to share with you the things that I did when I got here in order to get to the place where I am today. And I love to share this stuff at H&I meetings, and I'm going to share it here as well because I think it's really important. I was told when I got here to do 5 things. And those things were to get a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, get a sponsor, go to meetings, work the 12 steps, and help someone else. That's it. That's all that was required of me, and I thought, you know what, I could probably do that. And I'm going to tell you what I do today for my recovery. I didn't tell you at the beginning. My clean date is January 30th, 2009. I've got about 14 and a half years of sobriety. And let me tell you what I do for my sobriety today. I have a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings. I have a sponsor. I work the 12 steps of recovery in my life. And I help others. That's it. 14 and a half years, and I can tell you that absolutely nothing has changed. The formula never changes. If you want long-term, lasting sobriety, that is the solution. That is the solution. When I got here, I just wanted to not be in pain anymore. I heard somebody share that this morning as well at the workshop that I had. Put on is that, you know, I just didn't want to be in pain anymore. And I can relate 100% to that experience. And, you know, when I first got here, my sponsor told me a couple of things. She was like, Maria, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to imagine what could life look like if you were clean and sober. What does that look like for me? And, you know, and I, you can participate along if you want to. You can kind of picture those things for yourself if you want to. But, you know, for me, I sat in a moment of stillness with my higher power, And I thought about, what do I see for myself? And I was like, maybe I get my own apartment. Holy shit. Right? Maybe I get a set of keys for an apartment that's mine. Maybe my daughter comes back into my life and I get to see her once in a while. I'm not even thinking about custody yet. I just want to be able to see her and be a part of her life. Maybe I can go back to school and be something, do something with myself. Because addicts, we are fucking skilled people. We have so many skills and so many assets, and we cloud that stuff with drinking and using. And so it was like, maybe I could go back to school and do something with my life. You know, they seemed like simple things at the time, or they seem like simple things now, but at the time they seemed huge. And I was like, there's no way. Like, this is going to take me years to work towards these goals. Years. And my sponsor said, open your eyes, Maria. I'm going to tell you that you're going to get everything that you just pictured for yourself, everything that you imagined for yourself, times 10. And I was like, what? There's no way for an addict like me. Like, I used to live on the streets. I used to scoop water off of mud puddles to cook my dope. Like, I had nothing to my name. I had nothing. I had nowhere to live. Like, life was tough. And she says, you're going to get all that stuff times 10. And I'm going to tell you today that she lied to me. She did not tell me the truth. Because what actually happened to me is I got all those things that I pictured for myself times 1,000. I never thought for a dope fiend like me, who lived on the streets, who lived from couch to couch and house to house and turned tricks and did all these things, like all these things that I never thought I would ever do for my life. I can't even tell you how amazing life is today. You know, we have a reading that says that life will become far greater than you could ever imagine. So whatever it is that you imagined for yourself today, you haven't even imagined yet how great it's going to get. You haven't even imagined yet how great it's going to get. You know, get a big book. Go to meetings. Get a sponsor. Work the 12 steps like your life depends on it. And help someone other than yourself. That's it. That's the only formula. You know, I think about those things like, I know there's 5 things that I listed, but I kind of pictured it like a 3-legged stool. I don't start pulling out legs from underneath that stool to see which one is holding me up. I just keep doing all of them. I just keep doing all of them because I don't know which one is the one that has molded and shaped my recovery today. I just keep doing all of those things. And so, you know, today my life is amazing. I don't want to come across as a braggart or tell you about how amazing my life is because I want to tell you about all the things that I own and the places I've been and the things that I've done. It's not about that for me. What I can tell you today is that when I got here, I fucking hated myself. I felt so alone in this world. I felt so defeated and so depleted, and I felt like I didn't have a place in this world and nobody wanted me around. And that's not what I feel today. I feel a sense of belonging in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous. I feel a sense of accomplishment in the things that I've done for my life. You know, I have a career today. My daughter is now 23. I have a wonderful relationship with her. You know, I have a career that I never thought I'd have. That, you know, for whatever reason, drugs and alcohol didn't rip that opportunity from me, you know, to be able to do something with my life. Because when I got here, you know what I knew how to do? I knew how to be a bartender. I knew how to sell dope, and I knew how to turn tricks. That was it. Those were my skills. So I put on my resume that I'm good with people. Right? And somehow, you know, God has seen it fit to bless my life with all things recovery that have, like, absolutely revolutionized my life and my world. You know, I do a lot of service for Cocaine Anonymous. I sponsor a lot of women. I probably do more than my own fair share. You know, as Caleb shared, you know, 95% of the work gets done by 5% of the people. And, you know, when I got here, I was told to be of service to my fellowship that I love, and I continue to do that. And, you know, the gifts that I've received as a result of sponsoring women, being a part of my area meetings, being a part of my home group, being a part of World Service, whatever those things are, like, has, there's no return on that. That isn't, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's just been exponential, the return that I've received as a result of being of service to other people in this fellowship. I work the steps like my life depends on it. That has never stopped. I have continued to work the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous as they're laid out in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor through the Big Book. That's it. Those are the things that I do today for my recovery. And, you know, I'm really at a loss of words to tell you how great life can get for you. You know, if you're here and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, join us. You know, I heard somebody share earlier that you never have to pick up again. And, you know, somebody told me that when I got here, and I was like, well, I don't know if I like that idea. But what I can tell you, if you don't like that idea, is you never have to come down again, and that sounds like heaven. Yeah. Right? You never have to come down ever again if you're willing to do those five things that I mentioned to you. And if you want to know what they are, or you want me to text them to you, you want a list of what to do to stay clean and sober one day at a time, you want that solution, I'm willing to give it to you. I'm willing to share that with you. I'm willing to text it to you if you need that list and want to refer back to it or whatever the case may be. You know, it's a formula that's never changed in my life. And, yeah, you know, I've experienced a lot of things in my recovery, and I'm going to kind of wrap up with some of this stuff, is that, you know, I talked earlier about not having a spiritual toolkit or a tool belt full of tools that helped me stay clean and sober when I didn't get custody of my daughter back in my life. And that was a devastating blow to me because I thought that I had figured it out. And, you know, today I have all of that, and as a result, I've been able to go through some things in my recovery that I never thought I'd be able to make it through before I got here, clean and sober one day at a time. You know, unfortunately, my dad that I shared about that had, you know, he ended up having like 25 years of sobriety, and, you know, he stopped doing some things. He stopped working the steps, and he stopped going to meetings. And he stopped helping others, and he got loaded, and he died. Since I've been clean and sober, and I got to be able to go through that experience, and I have not found it necessary to use cocaine to get over that issue, to get over that situation. I lost my sister in addiction. She burned alive in a house because she went back in to get her dope after the house set on fire. And I did not find it necessary to use cocaine or any other drugs or mind-altering substances to get over that situation. I have celebrated many things in my recovery. I have been able to travel. I've been able to do so many things. I've been able to, you know, share this experience that I have with others. And no matter how good the days get and no matter how bad the days get, I have not found it necessary to pick up. Because I have that spiritual toolkit full of things today that helped me to stay clean and sober. And a big part of that is giving back to this program, sharing with newcomers, being a sponsor, being a part of World Service at whatever capacity that I'm able to give at. It doesn't matter whether I'm pouring coffee at my home group or whatever it is. If I'm giving back in this program, I am way too busy to get loaded. That's one thing I know for sure. And I'm grateful that earlier, I was going to kind of wrap up with this, that somebody had kind of mentioned, you know, if you're in this room and you're seeking a sponsor, there are sponsors in this room that are willing to help you and take you through the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous as they're laid out in the Big Book. Give yourself a chance. Life can get far greater than you could ever even imagine for yourself. And I am so grateful that you all are here. And I'm so grateful that you allowed me to share my experience, strength, and hope as it relates to my life, and that I got to share some of that with you. And I hope that you're able to take something home with you today and that you give yourself the opportunity for a new life. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Maria.